If you're an income investor and you're not generating more than $500 a month, we have one question for you.
Are you crazy?
Let ETFGuide.com help you. A $100,000 portfolio using our timely strategies should be able to generate between $500 and $2,000 per month.
Go to ETFGuide.com to get our monthly income trades.
Click on ETF combos and we'll show you how to turn your investments into a cash cow.
Isn't it time you lowered your risk
and increased your monthly income? Go to ETFGuide.com and we'll show you how.
You're listening to the Index Investing Show. This is America's only weekly program focused on the important stock and bond indexes and the financial products that track them.
And now presenting your host,
Ron DeLegge. Ron DeLegge.
Choosing the right investments is half the battle. The other half is knowing when to buy and when to sell, and also knowing what type of order you should be placing to execute those buy and sell trades. Coming up on today's show, Andy McOrman will be my program guest. He's a managing director at Wallach Beth. He's an institutional trader. He's going to give us the inside scoop on how to have smart order execution with your stocks and with your ETFs. Also coming up, I'll be doing a portfolio report card for a $353,000 401k plan. It's for Mary in Santee, California. We'll get into all the nitty-gritty details of Mary's portfolio. And then at the end of the show, I'll give her a final grade of passing or flunking. Now remember, if she gets an A or a B, that is an outstanding score. On the other hand, if she gets a C, D, or F, not a very good score. It means basically she's got to go back to the drawing board, make some major modifications to her investment plan. So that coming up, if you'd like to join us to talk about a particular stock, mutual fund, ETF, a particular investment strategy, or your own investment portfolio, call the show, 877-711-5611. Give me your first name along with your city, and I will get to you. If you're too shy to call, you can also tweet the program. At Index Show is my Twitter handle. You can also email me, ron@indexshow.com. And by way of reminder, if you ever miss our regular radio broadcast, you can always pick up our free podcast. It's available on iTunes as well as Stitcher and indexshow.com/podcast. So let's get right to it, beginning with order execution. What does smart order execution mean for stocks and ETFs? The invention of commission-free trading and for ETFs, and as well as the rock-bottom online stock commission rates. I mean, that's been a wonderful trend. That's been a wonderful thing for investors. But it still doesn't mean that you should be ignorant about the types of buy and sell orders that you're placing. Now, this is true whether you're a short-term trader or whether you're a long-term investor. So if you're going to trade, what's the best way to execute that stock or ETF order? Do you put in a market order? Do you put in a limit order? Do you put in a stop loss order? Do you do a day order, or do you do a good till cancel order? What type of order do you put in? There's a myriad of choices. So these are the things that we're going to discuss on today's show. Andy McOrman, Managing Director at Wallach Beth, will be my program guest. You will not want to miss this interview. I caught up with him earlier in the year, and we talked about it, and it's been one of my best interviews that I've done in 2014, so you're going to hear it. Also, getting into this portfolio, a $353,000 portfolio, it's a 401k plan. I'm going to grade it on today's show. And before I do that, I want to say something that's very important to all of our listeners. Listen to me very closely. The financial services industry likes to use boilerplate risk tolerance questionnaires in order to determine people's investment risk. That's what they do. So when you meet with a financial advisor or planner or broker, what they're going to do is they're going to give you a boilerplate risk tolerance questionnaire. It's going to ask you a whole bunch of questions. What would you do? How would you react if the market declines 20%? And the like. And how do you consider yourself as an investor? Are you aggressive? Are you conservative? Are you somewhere in between? It's going to ask you all these boilerplate questions. Now, in reality, the fastest and best way that I have found towards understanding whether a person's portfolio matches up with their risk tolerance or risk profile is not by asking them theoretical questions, but it's by examining their current investment portfolio in its entirety. Ultimately, it's how a person is currently investing their money, not how they would like to invest, or how they will invest, or how they think they will invest, that reveals most about who they really are. Let me repeat that because that's pretty important. It's how a person is currently investing their money, not how they would like to invest it, or how they will invest it, that reveals most about who they really are. I'll say it again, and I'll keep repeating it till I get it through to your head. Your investment portfolio is a reflection of who you are. It's a reflection of your personality. All of your genetic characteristics, your psychology, not just your age, not just your goals, not just what you want to be, but it really is an active description of who you are as an individual investor. I call it your unique investor personality. It's what makes each one of us unique. It's like a fingerprint. So my latest portfolio report card is for Mary in Santee, California. Let me give you some important details about Mary. She's 45 years old. She told me she considers herself a moderately aggressive investor, whatever that means. Okay, like I said, forget how we describe ourselves. The portfolio will tell me exactly if it's in line with how we think of ourselves, in this case, Mary. So she's saving rather aggressively in her 401k plan. She's got a $350,000 401k plan. She's saving annually $17,500, and her company chips in another $3,500. Now, she told me that retiring at age 57 would make her very happy, but she's also okay with 60. That gives her a time horizon between 12 to 15 years more before she finally retires. Now, she self-manages this 401k plan, and she's got the money scattered across seven different mutual funds and company stock. So we're going to examine Mary's portfolio in five key categories. We're going to look at diversification. We're going to look at risk. We're going to look at cost, tax efficiency, and performance. And then I'm going to give her a final grade on today's show. Before I do that, I want to mention one thing to all of our listeners that I make available is a portfolio challenge that I send to you, the listener. If your portfolio scores an A on Rhonda Legge's portfolio report card, I'll pay you $100. And this stands true for Mary's portfolio. If she scores an A on today's show, I get out my wallet and I pay her $100. Why do I do that? It's my way of rewarding well-built, smartly constructed investment portfolios. Simple as that. So in terms of diversification, taking a look at Mary's 401k plan, she's got, as I said, seven different mutual funds. She's got the Dodge & Cox Equity Fund. She's got a Mid-Cap Value Fund. She's got the Vanguard Prime Cap Admiral Shares. She's got the Vanguard Extended Market Index Institutional Plus, which tracks the S&P 500. She's also got the Vanguard International Growth Admiral Fund. So these are some of the mutual funds that she owns in her portfolio. Now, in taking a look at diversification, investment portfolios that lack exposure to all the major asset classes are not truly diversified. It's that simple. It's an irrefutable truth. In Mary's case, her 401k plan has exposure to most of the biggies. She's got exposure to domestic stocks. She's got exposure to emerging market stocks and international stocks, along with bonds. Very good. Yet, her retirement plan still misses other major asset classes. So she's got no exposure to commodities. She's got no exposure to real estate. And she's got no exposure to cash. So those are some major asset classes that Mary's portfolio is missing exposure to. She does okay on diversification, but she can definitely improve. Next up, we'll take a look at risk, cost, tax efficiency, and performance. when I come back. You're listening to the Index Investing Show. I'm Ron DeLegge. We're doing a portfolio report card for Mary in Santee, California. She's 45 years old. She has a 401k plan with a $350,000 value. I'm going to grade that portfolio on today's show. We'll also get you caught up on what some of the major market indexes are doing. Ron DeLegge, Index Investing Show, more when I come back. Be here or be nowhere.
The Index Investing Show with Ron DeLegge.
All right, this is the Index Investing Show. I'm your host, Ron DeLegge. 877-711-5611. That's the call-in number. This is a live program. You can also tweet the show. At Index Show is my Twitter handle. If you want to email me with a question or a ticker symbol, or if you want to take my portfolio report card challenge, where I pay you $100 if your portfolio scores an A, can you believe that? How crazy is that? I actually reward you for a well-built, smartly designed investment portfolio, but it's a challenge. And the only way that you'll know if you're going to score an A on Ron DeLegge's portfolio report card is to take the challenge. So try me. Ron@indexshow.com is the email address. Again, at Index Show is my Twitter handle. Very active on Twitter. Got some outstanding links throughout the week. Coming up in a little bit, we're going to be talking about smart order execution. If you trade stocks, if you trade ETFs, and I don't care if you're a short-term trader or long-term investor, what you need to know, all the pertinent facts about what types of market orders make the most sense. I should say trading orders make the most sense. Is it a market order? Is it a limit order? Should you do good till canceled, or should you do day orders? How about stop-loss orders? Well, all of that coming up with Andy McGorman. We'll be talking the 411 on smart order execution for stocks and ETFs. We're also doing a portfolio report card for Mary. She is in Santee, California. She's 45 years old. She's got a $350,000 401k plan. We already talked about diversification, the first part of the show. And her investment portfolio did okay in terms of diversification. She's got exposure to domestic and international stocks. She's also got some exposure to bonds, but she's missing some major asset classes like commodities, real estate, and cash. So she's got to do some improvements there. In terms of risk, let's take a look at the next category of Mary's portfolio. Now, most investors, unfortunately, do not realize that they've exceeded their level of risk tolerance. In other words, the maximum amount of tolerance, or rather risk, that they can handle. That's what we mean by risk tolerance. Most people don't realize they've exceeded that until the stock market sinks more than 20% in value. And I think that might be the case with Mary's 401k plan. Her asset mix is almost 90% in stocks, with 6% in bonds and the rest in company stock. Now, Mary's asset allocation is what on my scale of risk, it's three scales more risky than people in her age group and is much higher than her moderately aggressive description. When someone comes to me and says they're moderately aggressive and they've got 90% of their portfolio or close to that in stocks, that to me isn't moderately aggressive. That's hyper-aggressive, quite frankly. Mary's current asset mix is what I'd associate with someone who's 25 to 30 years younger. So in terms of her description of moderately aggressive, I don't think this portfolio matches that. And I also know that her age does not match up with that either. So on risk, I think she needs to do a better job of minimizing her risk and reducing that allocation to stocks. In terms of cost, this is very important. You know, investors have been brainwashed to think and to believe that the only thing that matters is performance. Well, that's kind of true, But what's closely related to performance are factors that influence performance are things that we need to pay attention to, like taxes, like costs. Frankly, you're not going to get very good performance if your investment costs are through the roof, if your tax liabilities are through the roof, and if your risk stinks and if your diversification stinks. So in this case, I want to see investment portfolios that deliberately minimize investment costs. That's the prudent way to build an investment portfolio. If you're ignorant about investment costs, guess what's going to happen? You're going to get ignorant results. It's like Galatians chapter 6, verse 7. What a man is sowing is what he shall reap, right? So that's what you need to pay attention to. So in terms of cost, Mary's largest holding is the Vanguard Institutional Index Plus S&P 500 fund. Now, this is a large cap U.S. stock fund. It charges just 2 basis points or 0.02% annually. She is getting a screaming deal on this fund. And by the way, this particular mutual fund will outperform 85% of or more of Wall Street's big shot money managers over the long run. So she's paying a very low fee. And I'm really glad to see that Mary's been smart enough to deliberately steer the bulk of her 401k money in low-cost index funds. Isn't that something that all 401k savers should be doing? So excellent job, Mary, in terms of reducing or minimizing investment costs. Remember, the less that you pay in fees, the less that you pay in transaction costs and brokerage commissions, the more of your performance returns that you get to keep. Isn't that great? Isn't that wonderful? Shouldn't that motivate us to minimize our investment costs to the max? Now, over decades, especially with a 401k plan or any retirement plan, this is a long-term type of investment account. So over the decades, the compounding impact or effect of cost savings, it can translate literally into 5-, 6-, and 7-figure differences in your favor. And that's what we want to encourage not just Mary, but all of our listeners to do. So good job in terms of cost. If you're just joining us, you're listening to the Index Investing Show. I'm Ron DeLegge. 877-711-5611 is the number. At Index Show is my Twitter handle. We're doing a portfolio report card for Mary in Santee, California. She's 45 years old. She told me that she considers herself a moderately aggressive investor, and she works in the security business. She manages this 401k plan herself, and we just looked at diversification. We just looked at risk, and we also looked at cost. Those are three key areas. Coming up next, we're going to look at Mary's 401k plan in terms of tax efficiency. We'll look at it in terms of performance. How has she done versus major market benchmarks? And then I will give her a final grade of A, B, C, D, or F. Now, we hope Mary gets an A or a B. That's an outstanding grade. It means that she doesn't need to make any tweaks or adjustments to her portfolio, or if she does, they're very minor. On the other hand, if she gets a C, D, or F, that means major modifications, major changes have to happen with her retirement plan if she's going to put her money back on track. So stay tuned for that. We'll be getting into Mary's final portfolio report card. If you'd like to take my portfolio report card challenge, get in touch with me, ron@indexshow.com. If you score an A, I'll pay you $100. Now, also coming up, we'll be talking with Andy McCormick at Wallach Beth about smart order execution for stocks and ETFs. It doesn't happen by accident. You know, everything with your investment portfolio, if you haven't noticed, should happen by deliberate choice. It shouldn't be something that happens by accident or by chance or by mistake. Every single detail of your portfolio, whether it's an IRA, 401k plan, a family trust account, whatever it is, Roth IRA, 403B, 457, I don't care. Whatever it is, it should absolutely be deliberate and purposeful. And this is what we're trying to help you understand and appreciate. Again, 877-711-5611 is the number. I'm Ron DeLegge. You're listening to the Index Investing Show. Coming up next, Andy McCorman with Wallach Beth. If you'd like to join us, we're here. We'll also finish Mary's 401k portfolio report card. That and much more. Be here or be nowhere.
Are you frustrated with how your investments never seem to grow? Do you feel like your investment plan might be off track? Are you concerned about your portfolio's fees, taxes, and risk? If you answered yes to any of these questions, you're not alone. Get the help you need with Ron DeLegge's free portfolio report card. Get a snapshot of your current investments and find out if your financial plan is really on track. Go to ETFguide.com and click on Ron's portfolio report card. Millions of people are investing blindly in the stock market. Don't be one of them. Ron DeLegge's free portfolio report card tells you everything you need to know about your portfolio's fees, taxes, and risk. Go to ETFguide.com and click on Ron's portfolio report card. Traditional IRA, Roth IRA, 401k plan, or brokerage account. It doesn't matter what you have. Ron's free portfolio report card will tell you everything you need to know. Go to ETFguide.com and click on Ron's portfolio report card. Don't invest without it.
How can you make better stock trades and better ETF trades, regardless of whether you're a long-term investor or a short-term trader? Good order execution is an absolute must. And here to talk with us about that is Andy McCorman. He's a managing director at Wallach Beth, which is based in New York City. They do institutional trading and execution. Andy, welcome to the Index Investing Show. Great to have you with us.
Thank you so much. Great to be on.
When it comes to buying or selling an ETF or a stock, people always have the question, what's the best way to execute that buy or sell order? Is it with a market order at current prices, or is it with a limit order at a predetermined price? What's your philosophy on market orders versus limit orders?
All right, that's a great way to start this off. And I'll say that the first distinction that I would like everyone to make, and this goes for a retail level or an institutional level, is understanding that although an ETF is listed just like a stock, and it's going to clear just like a stock, whether you're trading it on E-Trade or Schwab or whatever your venue is for trading it, it operationally is also a stock. However, it trades far different. Now, the smaller orders, some of the same rules apply, but what we're going to discuss today is just a way to understand that the real value of the ETF is its underlying asset class, and we'll go over that in the interview. But for the purpose of this question, just like a stock, you want to be careful with a market order, so, and especially in an ETF, because ETF tends to be thinner, and they tend to trade around the asset value of the product underneath the ETF versus the actual ticket itself. So a limit order will protect you. Now, we understand that in a retail side, you want to get in this trade and get out and get the order done. So I'm going to introduce a term, if you're not already familiar with, called a marketable limit order. And what that means is look at the prices on your screen. If you're comfortable with that, then just put a buy order in, let's say 2 to 3 cents above your limit, if you're above the limit on the screen if you're buying, and a sell order 2 to 3 cents below the bid. You are protected by Reg NMS, so you won't trade at a worse price, but what you will prevent is the chance that a market order goes to a thin product, or at the time you send your order, another larger order clears out the market, and therefore you have a trade that could be down, you know, 1, 2, 3% just on a mini odd lot. We've seen it often. So the advice for the question, again, is marketable limit order or a limit order, but certainly not a market order.
Andy McCorman of Wallach Beth joining us. Now, some ETFs, as you alluded to there, have very thin trading volume. So is there a minimum in terms of trading volume that investors should keep as a benchmark?
I don't usually stay with one, because what happens is you can have an ETF around an index benchmark that is liquid, but it's just a new idea. For example, we all know the S&P 500 is ranked market cap weighted. Well, now there's ETFs that are dividend weighted. There's ETFs that are fundamentally weighted. So you as an investor may say, hey, I like that. I think that this idea is going to return, you know, some alpha or a little bit better than the standard market cap. However, the ETF is not as popular, so the average daily volume is lower. So the two things to look at are, is the underlying asset class liquid, and what does the spread look like? If the spread is not that wide, meaning the difference between the bid and the offer, then the ETF should be fine to trade for the size that a retail person is doing. And just keep in mind, if the underlying asset class is liquid, then you should be fine in the product. The average daily volume or the daily trading volume does not mean, if it's thin, that an ETF is going to close down. It just means that there's not as many pros and individual investors trading the product.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to the Index Investing Show. Pleased to be talking with Andy McCormick. He's with Wallach Beth, based in New York City. They do institutional trading and execution. Now, I've heard the argument, Andy, that stop-loss orders are a bad idea for an ETF investor because they can get kicked out of a position if the fund suddenly hits that price and then suddenly bounces back and they lose that upside opportunity. So what's your take about stop-loss orders? Do they do more harm than help?
Well, here's the thing I would say about stop-loss orders. It really is up to the individual investor and what his goals of the investment are. It's hard to make a blanket statement that you should use them or not. I would start out by saying, not to have a cliche, but it's always seemed like kind of a Murphy's Law thing. You put, like you mentioned, you put your stop-loss order out there. There's a bad day. It hits the stop at your level, which happens to be the low for the year, and then all of a sudden the stock rallies. I mean, we have seen that. But I do think, like I said, that's kind of a Murphy's Law thing. You got to look at it from the other side of the coin. A lot of listeners, I'm sure, to this program are not full-time traders, so they have their levels, right? They might set them for the day. Maybe they set them for the week, or maybe they put a GTC order in for a month. Well, you don't want to be on vacation when an index or a market collapse, or let's say the market goes the other way and you're short and you miss your move because you weren't prepared. So it's hard to tell somebody that when the market collapse, takes an 8% correction and you would have been out at 1% if you had a stop loss order, that you shouldn't have a stop loss order, right? You just need to know what they are. And I would also add that you can use a stop limit order. So therefore, you don't have that kind of order where it triggers it and then goes to the next exchange and maybe trades down another 10, 15 cents. But if your goal is, I do not want to lose more than 2% on this investment, and you can't be in front of your trading screen every day, then there is a place for stop loss orders in your investment, ETF or equity, that is.
Now, all securities that trade on an exchange, including stocks, will have a bid-ask spread. And the larger that spread, the larger the trading cost is to the investor. Now, for ETF investors, how can they limit the financial impact or cost of bid-ask spreads?
Well, this is where you have a little difference. And, I always like to tell the truth, and I don't pull any punches when it comes to ETF investing and trading. So I will say that institutional investors have a slight advantage when dealing with a wider spread ETF, and that involves the creation redemption mechanism behind an ETF, and that larger blocks of ETFs can be hedged easier by the market makers that make the markets and the products. So, but for this call and for this, conversation, for a retail investor worried about spreads, they are relevant. And you're absolutely right, and it's a great point to point out that a large bid-ask spread does affect your trading cost. If you're trading an ETF that's 20 cents wide and there's a similar ETF that is a penny wide, well, then it's important that if the product is correlated enough and doesn't differ from your strategy, then as a retail investor, you will have lower trading costs by trading the ETF with the tighter spread, and it will limit the financial impact. ETFs do mature every day, though, and what I mean by that is an ETF garners popularity as it begins to get more volume. The spreads tighten quicker simply for the competition aspect that's going on in trading. So an ETF that you like and might be too wide for you to trade today as a retail investor, make sure you get in a correlated investment so you have your exposure to the asset class or the index. And just keep checking back because you might be surprised that the spreads tighten on that ETF as time goes on.
That's a great point. And also, it depends, too, how long you plan on holding that ETF. I mean, that could be a factor.
Absolutely
also.
Absolutely true. I'm glad you pointed that out. If you're going to hold an ETF, for a year or 2 years, and especially since the show, you know, is about indexing, and most indexing investors tend to be more long-term and less tactical, right? If you're tactical and you're crossing that 10-cent wide spread, even if you're trading once, I would say once a month, that's going to affect you. But if you are a long-term holder, I would say get your marketable limit order in there. A spread that's 10, 20 cents wide over the long term is not really going to hurt you. Of course, always be wary, though, because there is ETFs out there with dollar spreads. So always make sure you check the first two digits when you're putting that trade in.
Market liquidity, an often misunderstood term. Explain quickly what it means and how it applies to the ETF investor.
Absolutely. We kind of went over it real quick in those other points, and I'll just point it out real quick with a real simple example. Market liquidity in an ETF term is how liquid are the assets that make up the ETF trading. And to put it real simple, we all know how liquid the S&P 500 are. The 500 stocks that make up that index trade extremely liquid. The ETF, S&P, SPY, also trades extremely liquid. If I came out with an ETF that ranked the S&P 500 in alphabetical order, that wouldn't be a great investment idea, correct? But the underlying asset class would be the S&P 500. So technically, the ETF could be very liquid if it needed to be.
Great explanation and great ideas. Thank you so much for sharing your knowledge with us. You just heard from Andy McCorman of Wallach Beth. This is the Index Investing Show. I'm Ron DeLegge, and I'll be right back after this short break.
The Index Investing Show with Ron DeLegge.
I was thinking, you know, if you conducted a random survey of anybody on Wall Street about what their definition of a good trade execution is, you're bound to get so many different answers. I was just thinking about the high-frequency trader, also known as HFT. You know, what's their definition of good execution? It would probably mean anything that allows them to legally front-run other market participants without getting caught. That's the HFT, that illicit group that's been allowed to exist by the Securities and Exchange Commission. That's their definition of good execution. Anything that allows them to illegally front run other market participants without getting caught. Now, for the rest of us, as you just heard in that interview with Andy McCorman at Wallach Beth, I mean, we really have to think about this in terms of planning out and strategizing what type of orders we want to place so that we get the type of execution that we're looking for. So an excellent interview, very timely information. I also want to say something else that's very important. The idea that long-term investors can be ignorant about a smart order execution is completely wrong. In fact, I think we've seen a lot of propaganda in that area that long-term investors don't need to trade or shouldn't trade, and that they should just buy and hold their investments forever. Let me just say that that's utter propaganda. And the reason it's propaganda is because even the least active investor will at some point in their life need to buy and sell securities within their portfolio. Why is that? Well, because people's investment time horizon are variable, but never forever. People's investment time horizons are variable, but never forever. That even includes those of us who are fortunate enough to have the life expectancy of Methuselah. So think about that. Think about that in terms of understanding what type of orders you should be placing and making sure that they're in line with your financial goals. So what a person sows is what they reap. If you're blindly entering stock and ETF orders without a clear understanding of the consequences, well, you're going to reap unexpected results from those decisions. 877-711-5611. That's the number. You're listening to the Index Investing Show. I'm your host, Ron DeLegge. If you'd like to join us, we're here. At Index Show is my Twitter handle. You can get in touch with me there. If you ever miss our regular radio broadcast for whatever reason, you can pick up our podcast at iTunes or Stitcher. It is available at no cost to you. My August ETF Profit Strategy newsletter is out. It's just been published. We've done our monthly income trade for the month of August. I encourage you to pick up a copy, especially those of you that are looking for higher income. Our income mix portfolio since February of 2012 has generated almost $24,000 of monthly income. So to see our latest income trade, just go to etfguide.com, click on the Profit Strategy newsletter, and subscribe. So let's get you caught up real quick before we finish off our portfolio report card for Mary in Santee, California. She's got a $353,000 401k plan. Give you a quick recap of where key market benchmarks or indexes stand so far in 2014. Taking a look at the total U.S. stock market, ticker symbol VTI is the ETF that tracks that, which again encompasses large, mid, and small company stocks based in the U.S. VTI up just over 6%. BND, which tracks the total U.S. bond market, ahead by 3.7%. We continue to see bond prices rise and yields fall. Bond yields, of course, in the vicinity of around 2.5%. That's a total U.S. bond market yield. We continue to see, again, bond prices rise, bond yields fall. That's an inverse relationship. VEA, which tracks international stocks, ahead by 3% year-to-date. VWO, which follows emerging market stocks, ahead by just over 7% and slightly outperforming the U.S. stock market year-to-date. How about gold? Ticker symbol GLD, up almost 9.5% and easily outperforming both bonds and stocks. VNQ, which tracks REITs, also known as real estate investment trusts, sizzling. VNQ ahead by just over 19% since the beginning of the year. REITs, along with utilities, XLU, up 13%, continue to be both hot areas in terms of market performance. And typically, investors don't buy REITs or utilities for hot performance. Usually, they're looking for yield. Well, not only are they getting yield that's higher than what they would get with bonds, but they're also getting a yield that's better than the S&P 500. Plus, they're getting some pretty juicy returns so far in 2014. So that is what's happening with some of the key benchmarks. Now, in terms of trading products or leveraged ETFs, now, these are funds that aim for magnified returns. So a couple of ticker symbols for you strategic traders that are doing really well right now that you should probably have on your radar screen. SOXL, which tracks semiconductor stocks, up 32% over the past 3 months. TMF, which tracks long-term U.S. treasuries, aims for triple daily performance. TMF ahead by 15% over the past 3 months. And then one final one, gold mining stocks. Again, this is the triple daily product from Direction Shares, NUGT, ahead by a sizzling 42% over the past 3 months. So those three leverage ETFs performing quite well. So let's finish off Mary's portfolio report card. We looked at diversification. She did okay, but she needs to make some improvements. We looked at risk. We looked at cost. Now let's look at tax efficiency and performance before I give her final grade. So tax efficiency, what I mean by that is an investment portfolio that purposely and deliberately minimizes the individual investor's tax bill or tax liability to the max. And of course, you want to do that legally, everybody. We don't try to put together illegal schemes by which to not pay our taxes. But in terms of tax efficiency, Mary's 401k money, like all retirement accounts, IRAs as well as Roth IRAs, is growing tax deferred. So she's got no outstanding loans also in this 401k plan, and she's got altogether no real large or significant tax liability issues that I have observed. So she does very well on tax efficiency. If I saw her with an outstanding loan in her 401k plan, that would definitely raise some red flags, because remember, with a loan on a 401k plan, if you terminate or leave that job and you don't pay back that loan, that becomes a taxable income to you. and that would create a definite problem. In terms of performance, I posed the question to our audience, what is a satisfactory performance return? Does anybody know? Is it a performance return where you feel, oh, this feels like a good return? Or it's a return that my wife likes or my husband likes or that my financial advisor says is good. Is that the definition of a satisfactory performance return? Absolutely not. The definition of a satisfactory performance return is one that matches or exceeds a blended mix of passive index funds or ETFs that correspond to a person's exact asset mix. And from March of 2013 to March of 2014, guess what happened in Mary's 401k plan? She gained 17%, while a similar portfolio of passive index ETFs with Mary's same asset mix gained 18%. Well done, Mary. Well done. You kept right up in line with the performance of passive index benchmarks, and that's what you want to do. That's what you want to do. So in terms of performance, she did an outstanding job. Mary's final portfolio report card is B+. It's a fantastic score, and although it's not perfect, it's awfully close. She's done an outstanding job, as we covered, at minimizing her investment expenses. Altogether, her portfolio, all the funds that she owns, when we blend all the expenses, she's paying just under 0.25%. So that's outstanding. But she does have some weaknesses. She's overweighted in stocks. I think she's got to dial down her risk. And if she does that, if she recalibrates her portfolio with one that better matches her age and her risk, I think she's going to meet her goals. That does it for another episode of the Index Investing Show. Thanks for joining us.
The opinions expressed in this broadcast are not necessarily that of our advertisers, sponsors, or broadcast partners. The discussion of investing is general and should not be construed as investment advice or an offer to buy or sell securities. Listeners are responsible for their own investment decisions and results. Before investing in mutual funds or ETFs, always consult a prospectus for risk, charges, expenses, and other information. Read the prospectus carefully before investing. Past performance is not indicative of future results. No reproduction or dissemination of the Index Investing Show is permitted without the expressed written consent of its producers.